This is Briar Klopp, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Greenbush, Minnesota. And we're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning. Farm News Time here on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick with Jamie Dickerman. Tyler Donaldson will have an update as well. Today kicks off a clipper system moving into eastern North Dakota by mid-morning, spreading southeast into the southern Red River Valley in the afternoon. Snow will exit the region by mid-evening, leaving over 2 inches of snow in parts of eastern North Dakota and around an inch in the southern Red River Valley. Temps will start chilly, morning lows in the single digits, afternoon highs in the single digits in the north, low teens in the south. Tomorrow will bring bitterly cold conditions, sub-zero morning lows, wind chills in the teens below zero. Afternoon highs recover into the teens under a mix of sun and clouds. And late tomorrow evening, a weak disturbance could bring light snow showers to northwest Minnesota, tapering off overnight with lows in the single digits to low teens.
Global weather patterns are sending mixed signals to corn and soybean markets, with a slight bullish tone emerging. World Weather Incorporated in southern Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, and eastern Argentina raising concerns for crops already short on moisture, while timely rain in western Brazil and Argentina offering some relief. Elsewhere, heat stress in Australia is easing. Parts of South Africa may see needed moisture, and crop conditions remaining mostly favorable in China, Europe, and India. In Southeast Asia, drying trends are developing outside of the wetter regions.
The first week of February kicks off with key market drivers in both grains and livestock. Martinson Ag Risk Management President Randy Martinson says the market will be watching the December crush numbers and ongoing weather concerns.
We'll take a look at what the December crush numbers were for soybeans. That's going to be pretty important to the market. Right now, the average trade guess, I think, is like 225 million bushels for the month. So another record, but I mean, that's what we've been seeing is records. We're also going to be looking at, once we start February, that's when we start setting the base prices for crop insurance. So that's going to be important, as that's going to put in the underlying, our risk management tool, you might say, for ag. And then, you know, weather is going to continue to play a big part in demand. Just if we can keep exports going. The dollar has been down pretty good this week. That's helped to support wheat and the grains.
Martinson says international and domestic factors will continue to influence grain and livestock markets this week.
We are seeing a little retracement, some profit taking. We're seeing a little bit of position maneuvering. And then we're also looking at, you know, weather has been a major driver for this week. You know, we've had good demand yet, but concerns about weather in South America, in the Black Sea region, both Russia and Ukraine, and even the U.S. has helped us push these markets higher.
The outside markets are in the midst of a huge sell-off. Gold hit record levels this past week at over $5,500 per ounce. Profit taking began Friday, extended into today's trade. The spot gold prices crashed more than 10% to approximately $4,600. Silver going through a similar freefall, down more than 30% on Friday. Bitcoin is edging higher this morning after hitting a 10-month low over the weekend.
The Washington Post is reporting that the EPA will reapprove dicamba with an announcement this week. The over-the-top application in soybeans and cotton will include label changes. Those measures are expected to include the use of buffering agents, calendar cutoff dates, and a ban on applications when temperatures top 95 degrees.
Farmland values across the Red River Valley continue to show strength, even as ag faces economic headwinds. Farmers National Real Estate Broker Dale Weston says the land market has remained more resilient than many expected.
You know, every day it seems like we read something not so positive, whether it be commodity prices or crop input costs or, you know, things of that nature, that you would just assume that the land market would be heading down. And especially in the, what I would say in the Cass County area, southern Red River Valley, it sure seems to be really resilient. And now when we head out into the, what I call the prairie pothole region, there are pockets of areas that seem to be weakening a bit.
Weston says buyer activity has slowed compared to the peak years of strong commodity prices. He says farmland values remain supported by limited supply, long-term demand, but future gains will depend on improvements in farm profitability and commodity prices.
A week ago, President Donald Trump was on social media complaining about South Korea and its delay in ratifying the Korea-U.S. trade deal. The threat of a tariff increase got the attention of the government. Weekend negotiations were going on, issues not resolved, but progress reportedly made. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. The federal government likely to remain shut down until at least tomorrow as the House prepares for critical votes on a must-pass funding package. House Speaker Mike Johnson facing some uncertainty over whether he has enough Republican support to move forward with the Senate-approved bill, which would fund most federal agencies through the end of September and provide short-term funding for the Department of Homeland Security. Legislation must first pass a procedural rule vote, with Democrats expected to oppose it. Several conservatives raising concerns over spending. The House Rules Committee meets this afternoon to begin consideration, setting the stage for a high-stakes vote later this week.
How important is inoculating soybeans? Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has more on that story.
NDSU Extension Cropping System Specialist Victor Gomez has been working on a research project determining the importance of inoculants in soybeans.
What we found with this first year of research is that inoculation, yes, is important. It does outcompete the untreated check across all locations. However, the best treatments do differ based on where you are. So pretty much in Dickinson and Williston, any treatment containing an inoculant was better than a control. In Hettinger, the gains were very little. And for them, three times the recommended rate of the liquid inoculant containing Brady Rhizobium japonicum was the best result. And in Minot, with Minot being the only site where we could detect a pre-existing rhizobia population in the soil, we did not see an increased benefit of that inoculation. So probably they already had a very well-established rhizobia population in the soil, so adding more did not make a difference.
Gomez expects more conclusive results as they get more time to research.
Overall, what we observed with this first year of trial is that the results were a little scattered, a little inconsistent across locations, and that's somewhat what we already expected. My message here is keep inoculating your soybeans. Typically, what we saw with our research is that using the standard rate works well. It gives you a boost there, but hopefully we're going to have something local, more adapted organism to recommend in the coming years.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
The U.S. cattle herd is at its smallest level in more than 75 years. According to USDA's new cattle inventory report, the supply of cattle and calves totaling 86.2 million head January 1st. That's down from 86.5 million a year ago. Beef cow numbers declining 1%, while the inventory of dairy milk cows rising 2%. Beef heifer replacements rising 1%, dairy heifer inventories edging up 2%. The calf crop is down 2%.
BW Fusion is hosting an agronomy roadshow, including a stop tomorrow in Sioux Falls. Chief Agronomy and Product Officer Jason Schley said this event will highlight the strategies to get the most out of the fertilizer investment.
It's really tying a stress management budget into your fertility budget, bringing them together because they work hand in hand. The more stress that that crop is under, the less that crop is going to eat. Just like you or I, if we're sick, we're laying around in bed, we don't typically need to eat a lot, right? Just keep, because we aren't wasting a lot of energy. However, we're not producing much either. So again, it's walking that grower through those steps. What are typical stresses that they may run into in the season? How do we address them? And how do we keep that plant more metabolically active, I guess, so we can communicate with the microbes and ultimately get a better lunch that day.
In this environment, Schley says it is important to look out of the box, making better decisions through better information.
House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson has tentatively scheduled a farm bill markup for the week of February 23rd. That's according to Politico and sources familiar with the plan. While the bill text has not yet been released, it is expected to mirror key priorities from the 2024 version that advanced out of committee but failed to become law. Committee staff still waiting on cost estimates from the Congressional Budget Office, which could delay the process. House Ag Republicans are aiming for a floor vote before the Easter recess. The measure, referred to as Farm Bill 2.0, is expected to address rural development, research, and could include provisions for year-round E50.
The U.S. has signed a new reciprocal trade agreement with El Salvador aimed at improving market access for U.S. ag products. The agreement was signed by U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer and El Salvador's Minister of Economy, and focuses on reducing trade barriers such as fumigation requirements, facility and product registration, and acceptance of U.S. regulatory certificates. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. U.S. pork exports remaining relatively strong in November despite a decline from last year's levels. U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom says demand continues to hold up in key international markets.
For the month of November, over $70 per head value in pork exports. Latin America continues to shine, led by Mexico. It's on a definite record pace and has been all year, and another big month in November.
Hallstrom says strong performance also coming from Central America, parts of Asia.
Central America as well already has set a record. Pork exports to Guatemala were record large in November, and the Dominican Republic, the largest export month in more than a year. Switching to Asia, Korea the last several months has had a comeback from earlier in the year. I think all in all, continued broad-based strength on exports on pork continues to be the theme, and we're going to finish out the year when we get to December data with maybe not a record, but it'll be one of the top two or three years ever for pork exports.
This past year was a busy year for the Swine Health Information Center. Associate Director Dr. Lisa Betkin talks about some of the projects they researched on behalf of hog farmers across the country.
For 2025, we had $2.5 million allocated from the pork checkoff, and so we utilized that with matching funds for 2025, essentially funding 32 different research projects. And so these projects covered all of our five pillar areas, so encompassing global and domestic emerging disease monitoring, different research topics including H5N1 and our plan of work, as well as analyzing data and communicated coordinations.
A lack of research into H5N1 in swine prompted some action.
There is a lot of focus and work in dairy and in poultry. However, not a lot of work had been completed in swine. And we funded 10 different projects, really encompassing different things such as what the infection looked like across multiple ages of pigs, ranging from baby pigs all the way up to sows. We wanted to look at what is the mammary system involvement as compared to dairy cattle, and can that highlight transmission in swine? Other things such as pre-existing immunity, potential for vaccine development, and then also assessing different biosecurities.
Checking markets this morning from this overnight trade, we're starting the week with some red on the screen. Down 2.5 cents right now for Minneapolis wheat. The May contract is at 589. Chicago wheat for May down 4.25, and we're down a nickel for hard red winter wheat, the March contract. March corn down 2.25, 426 is the quote. Soybeans for March down 5.25, at 10:59. On the farm calendar, first of all, CattleCon 2026 going on in Nashville. They have events starting today, but officially kicking off tomorrow. We'll have broadcast coverage right here on the Red River Farm Network. The Northern Corn and Soybean Expo is tomorrow. That's at the fairgrounds in West Fargo, the annual meetings for the North Dakota corn and soybean groups. Again, their 9th annual Corn and Soybean Expo. And in Aberdeen, a program called Sustaining the Legacy, a look at estate planning and farm succession. They've got three different sessions starting tomorrow, and it'll be held at the Extension Center in Aberdeen. Have a great day. You are listening to the Red River Farm Network.